Right. All right. I'm going to continue today talking more about work that's relevant to your project. At the end of this lecture and in the next lecture, we'll start looking at radio frequency transistors and how to model them. But today I thought I'd look at the auto transformer. How many of you have chosen your projects? One? Can I just get some statistics on that? I'll have to record that. We might as well collect those projects right now. All right, so we've got Nick. Right. And what project are you doing?
First one.
Okay. You working with anyone?
I'm not going to do it on my own.
Right. That's fine. Okay. Up the back. Cassandra, what are you doing? First one. Doing number one. Right. And who are you working with?
I don't know.
No one yet. That's all right. Okay. You two ladies.
They're probably doing project one.
First one. Okay. Alright, second one. Agnes, sorry. You're in the second one. You working with Aaron? Okay. Do you want to do the talk? What is it, Tom?
I had to do 2420 now. Yeah. And I can't work with anyone.
2420 and you can't work with anyone. Well, you have a choice of project of the two, I think. I think I have one other student. Oh, 2420, are you talking about a conflicting course?
No, I'm talking about the device.
You're doing number three.
Oh, sorry, the 2420. You want to do the microwave device, do you? That's the, well, it's the 900 megahertz 2420. No, you don't have to do it at all. You can, you explained last lab that if I don't get enough takers if I don't get enough master students, then I probably won't bother with Max 2420 and you can do one of the other two projects.
Okay. Mm.
You have to do it by yourself, that's fine. Alright, okay. Yes, sir. Tim.
The first one.
You're doing number one. And you're working with?
Yeah. Is it either a group of three or?
Yep, if you like.
And the guy, Tron.
Who's sorry?
Tron.
Tron. Yeah. Who that is? Okay, no worries. Yes, okay. Julian.
Probably going one, I'm still undecided.
You going to work with anyone?
I'm not sure.
What's your name, sir?
It's Rob.
Rob, yeah.
Probably the first one.
First one. This lecture won't be wasted today by the look of it. Okay, yes, sir. What's your name again?
Vikas.
Vikas, yeah. Yes.
First one, I'm working with Abbas.
With Abbas? Okay. And I think I know I have one other. Everyone, that's off to a good start. So you've made your decision. So project number one's got not going to be too much of a waste then from today's lecture's point of view. You probably need this also in project two, what we're going to talk about today. In the lecture notes on the web, I concentrate on bandpass filters, as in BOIC. And as you probably understood by now, although we haven't built the filter yet, it's one of the exercises, you'll find it very difficult, and you can see it in the analysis, to make a filter that is narrow band, a bandpass filter that's narrow band. In other words, a filter that just selectively picks out one band of frequencies from others around it in a fashion where the passband of the filter, the 3 dB point passband of the filter, so where the 3 dB point, so here's the transfer function, reaching up to 0 dBm, these 3 dB points where the transfer function is 3 dB lower, this bandwidth, B, is a tiny fraction of the carrier frequency. Okay? Because those filters become very difficult to construct. All right, so That's the point of today's lecture, is that I did actually, and I sent an email around. Did you all get my email last week? I'd updated the web notes because I figured out how you can go about designing these things. There are design guidelines for them, of course, but making them simple enough to use is the tough bit. So what I thought, this is a little bit out of date. What I hoped to do was to do more on transistors today, but it turned out to be quite lengthy an explanation, so I'm concentrating most of the lecture on these transformers. They're the LC resonator filters, and if you've read the web notes on them, you'll see that there's an analogy with cavity resonators. And these are devices that I spoke about a few lectures ago, where you have two adjacent cavities, okay? To try and find my vertical resonator that's cut open, and has some resonating elements in them, usually coils. The signal's coupled in on one resonator and coupled out on the other, and there's a small gap, a hole drilled in through the cavities or something, which allows you to capacitively couple, electrostatically couple signal in one coil to the other. All right. So what we're going to do is learn how to model them, but the ones you can build without having a lathe that don't require you to make your own copper box and silver plate it, weld it, and machine it, consist simply of circuit components. And this is what they look like. They have their back-to-back electrostatically coupled transformers, basically, and they make rather good narrow-band filters. Of course, if there are discrete components that you can buy that do the same job. The only problem is they're never tunable. You can never build them to your own specification. You have to buy them. And for low frequencies, down below about 200 megahertz, you would normally use a ceramic filter for this purpose, and they come in a range of values that suit standard intermediate frequencies, because you would normally put those in the output circuit of a device in order, or input circuit in order to filter frequencies from around the desired frequency. Usually you'd use them for intermediate frequencies, because then you can have a narrow pass band around the signal that you want to look at. And the modulation, of course, would cause sidebands that are contained within the pass band of that filter, but it would allow you to reject signal frequency components from outside that pass band. And such filters are also good as the preselector in a superheterodyne receiver, because if you're narrow, then it's much easier to get rid of those images, and that's relevant to the project, at least with the one based on the 1496. So if we're going to do a radio receiver and transmitter from 27 to 54 megahertz, you'll easily see that with a low intermediate frequency, you're going to have to carefully choose which of those frequencies you're actually going to work at. And I guess what one could do in this project, it's up to you to a degree, is you could make a number of these. I would suggest three ISM bands that are useful. One is at 27 megahertz, so you'd make one for 27, and you would make one for 40 megahertz and one for 50 megahertz, okay? 50 to 54. So one with a 4 megahertz bandwidth and two with a megahertz bandwidth. And basically what these are, they're matching networks. They match the characteristic impedance 50 ohms to 50 ohms. And the auto transformers here, which is what I describe in this lecture, step these low impedance levels up to very high impedance levels. These two are tuning capacitors intended to tune the inductance of these coils. And this is a coupling capacitor, which is very important. And we're going to look at the role of that coupling capacitor as well, because it's crucial in the design. All right, let's analyse them. That's the picture there of a. Just turn my mobile off just in case there's an accident. All right, so what we're going to do is we're going to design this largely as pi and t matching networks. So if you remember when you did matching networks, there was a simple procedure there for designing to design your match. And these are in many ways just glorified L or pi or T matching networks that have a super steep response that allows you to filter frequencies very efficiently. And what I'm going to present to you is not a complicated design procedure. Normally these are fairly complicated. I'm just going to present an intuitive one. And as you may have noticed, I've already copied up a MATLAB Solve program onto the web that models these. So you can go straight to modelling in MATLAB and then build one. And the way we analyse it is we divide the circuit into two halves. We consider matching the source or load Z0 to a virtual resistance R prime. So if you remember the circuit I had above, it had it has two halves. Let's split this coupling capacitor right down the middle and look at the symmetry of this. Like all those LC networks that Boeck describes, this one's also symmetric, okay? So it looks exactly the same on this side as this side because we're always going to go from 50 ohm to 50 ohm. Right, when you split it down the centre like that, then this coupling capacitor is now split into two series coupling capacitors, and there's this hypothetical resistance R that we're going to match to, and we don't even know what its value is. Okay, that's the first thing, and the most different thing about this matching process is R prime is a variable, okay? And of course we want to reduce as much as possible the number of variables that specify our design. Okay, and so we have this other half of the circuit which we're going to forget. And if you come over to here, you see now that you're matching the characteristic compared to Z0 to R prime. And you're doing so through this special type of transformer. Right, there are a whole sequence of steps here that are going to take you probably some time to absorb. That's part of the problem I have with this, is it's so complicated. There are so many ways you could do it. And you know how it is, you always end up with pages and pages of algebra and it doesn't mean anything. Well, that's the problem I had with this. So what I've done is to condense the steps that I had all into a sequence of approximations. The first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to forget entirely about the coupling capacitor by rewriting. This is a narrow band circuit, only works at one frequency. So wherever you see omega in this, you can think of that as being that peak resonant frequency in the centre of the pass band of this filter. Omega C even, I think I call it on the web OMC. And this R then is no longer R prime, but provided the coupling capacitor is small, then coupling capacitor can be this whole that series combination of R and C, as you know, can be written in a parallel combination, and you'll have a small capacitance across here and a new resistor R. And I'm not even going to bother. I've got these equations up here to tell you how to obtain R from R prime and vice versa. R is in fact larger than R prime, but you don't actually need it in the design to even know it. All you have to do is recognise on the basis of what you've learnt so far in the course that there's nothing wrong with rewriting that circuit in the following fashion. Okay? And what I'm going to do is I'm going to keep chipping away from this until we end up with an L network. This whole thing is nothing but a crazy L network that's gone wrong with lots and lots of components that are easier to build than the L network, but we have to keep splitting it. So is everybody happy with this so far, with my arguments, or has it been already a bit too hypothetical?
What is that thing?
What's what thing?
That
transformer?
Yes.
Ah, is that your only question?
Yes.
Yes, because that's the very next thing I've got to describe, what the hell that thing is. I've actually drawn it before. It's a coil, right? And you tap in at a lower winding. They're called auto transformers. And that means you've never heard of them before in engineering. Is that correct?
Yes.
Right. Okay, well, I have to explain auto transformers. They're very common at RF, although they're always just simple things that you build yourself. Yeah. Don't worry about it. Yeah, you can... I put it up there, but I was actually very tempted to pull it out because I never use it. And in the work you've done so far, you've already been transforming series impedances into parallel combinations of impedances, right? If you have a capacitor in series with a resistor, and you're only interested in its impedance at one frequency, but because they're just the sum of a real and imaginary part, you can rewrite them as parallel combinations. Now, I just happen to put the maths up there for you, but you actually don't need to know it in this argument. All you need to know is that you can do it. Okay? Because R prime, in an L network, R prime would be known, and R would be known, and you'd match from Z0 to R. In this argument, you don't know them. And the benefit of not knowing them is that now Q becomes something you can specify, whereas in the L network, Q was a result of the design, which is a bad thing, okay? So I'm quite happy to just keep going on like this, of course, changing that circuit. Whether or not I get anywhere is what the whole point of this lecture is about, right? And it's to show you how to do the design. So I go. So are there any more questions now? Is anyone still having trouble with replacing R? You'll notice that CT I've kept the same. That was a bit cheeky because that was still the tuning capacitor. Well, that's the same argument, except that for these things to work, the coupling capacitor always has to be much less than the tuning capacitor CT, which tunes out this auto transformer. That's an assumption. And it's also something that you should keep your eyes out for when doing your designs, okay? All right. So if everyone's happy now with how I get this R here, I think the auto transformer's next, is it? Yes, right, good, we're getting there. Righto, so now we have a matching network which matches Z0 to R, except it's not one you've seen before because it has that auto transformer. The coupling capacitor has been eliminated in the design flow. That means that you can't choose it mathematically. We're going to worry about that later on. It leads to an interesting physical idea. But CC is very important, right? Because even though it's CC represents this tiny electrostatic gap, you see, this drill hole that we put in these, between these two completely closed Gaussian surface resonators, the coupling capacitor was nothing, a little peephole from one inductor to the other. And that represents a tiny capacitance, that little peephole. Why does it? Well, because there's a high voltage, a very high voltage on the top of these coils. You tune them for quarter wave resonance, so there's a short down the bottom, they're connected to the cavity. At the top, they're open circuit, it's a quarter wavelength, as you've been measuring in the lab when studying inductors. There's a very high voltage there. There's an electric field line that feels across here, and were it not for that hole, of course, it would never get anywhere over into this part. But if there's a little hole, some of the electric field lines peek through, and there's a little bit of energy coupling between those inductors. The little bit, that little CC I've ignored because of its small size, is actually the crucial thing that makes this work. And you'll see, because of that, it becomes almost the only design parameter you need to find out. And you can do that with MATLAB. So it should be clear that for a narrowband filter, we're going to design a high Q L network. In other words, we're going to try and make that R as large as possible. Okay? But the first thing I really need to do is get rid of that auto transformer. So here they are, Tom. We have a matching network. We don't know R. Instead, we choose Q. Specifying Q is the only step in our process. So first, we must model this auto transformer, get this off our chest. Now, who remembers this formula for a general transformer, this circuit, this T circuit, for a general transformer? In other words, if you have a transformer like this, here's a, around these transformers, of course, where you've got a current I1 flowing in there, that's V1, I2 flowing in there, and V2, who remembers the formulae J omega L1 I1 plus J omega M I2? And V2 equals J omega M I1 plus J omega L2 I2, where L1 and L2 are the primary and secondary inductances, and M is the mutual inductance between those transformers. I1 and I2, the current's flowing in. Have you seen that before? Remember that?
Yeah.
And you can replace this circuit by that, where I1 and I2 still flow in here, and V1 and V2 are there, and that is, say, common between these. I should have a common line between them. Then that's that circuit there, where the M is now taken to be just any old inductance, is in fact equivalent in every way to that circuit over there, and I'm going to use it now. I'm going to use it to show you what an auto transformer is. Right, an auto transformer is a special transformer in which there's only one turn. The primary is formed by a tap on the secondary. In other words, the primary shares its current path with the secondary, okay, down the bottom. So it's nothing more than that. If you have a coil, just any old inductor, then an auto transformer says break the insulation on the wire and solder another wire to that. That's called a tap. And there you've got a transformer. Okay? In an auto transformer, the voltage V1 equals nu, some fraction nu times V2, where nu is normally taken to be the turns ratio. So if the voltage V2 here is given by that and V1 is this, then V1 equals nu V2. Okay, and nu is always less than 1, by the way. And you can see the way it works. I'm forgetting about the mathematics and I'm going back to Faraday's law. And I'm saying, well, some fraction of the magnetic flux of this secondary must be linking that tap, namely the little bit down the bottom here. And that's what nu tells you, because remember that the electromotive force in a loop is given by Faraday's law. And I should write the line integral of E dot dl equals minus the magnetic flux. Remember, the integral of the magnetic field over the surface. Well, the magnetic field is linking all of these turns, and a fraction of those turns is also linked by the magnetic field. And so there's a simple relation, geometrical relationship between V1 and V2 in an auto transformer. Right, now, using that, and only that, you can show that the mutual inductance is nu times L, where L is the total inductance of the transformer. And L is the inductance of the inductor from which you made the auto transformer. In other words, the whole thing. That's capital L, and it's what our L will be in this derivation of the filter. And L is the total inductance, and L1, the primary inductance, this little bit here, is actually nu squared L. Now, it's easy to show that. Here's the proof. All right, there's a comparison between an auto transformer here and its more complex equivalent circuit, where the currents don't share the same wire when they flow. Okay, and there's the formula up the top there for this transformer, the one you've known already. Okay, and I've written them down on the board here, by the way. Follow them. All right. Now, what we do is we just take these two equations and we use the fact that V1 equals nu V2. Well, if V1 is nu V2, then I'll multiply on both sides of the second equation and I get this. Okay. Remember that the currents, I1 and I2, are defined in equivalent ways. I1 is flowing in here and I2 up in the top there, you see. So they're exactly the same currents. And if you equate these, you can see that, first of all, L1 is nu times M, okay? And M is equal to nu times L2. So L2, remember, is the secondary inductance, and in the case of the auto transformer, it's L, it's the inductance of that wire. So L2 and L are the same thing. And then finally, we end up with M equals mu L, immediately follows from that one. And then L1 is mu M, that comes from here. M is mu L, so there's nu squared. There's a nu squared now relating L1 to L. So what I've done here is to show you that if you have an auto transformer and you make those parameter substitutions, you can treat it as an ordinary transformer. And interesting thing about it is that it's normally assumed to be the case in most courses that deal with auto transformers, but you can see it's really just Faraday's law again. Okay. Now, what does that help tell us? Well, here are the new equivalent circuits. If this was the equivalent circuit of the ordinary transformer, then it simplifies to a two-parameter equivalent circuit for an auto transformer. Auto transformers, only two things are important. One is this turns ratio, nu, which you can easily measure if you're not sure what it is, although usually it's a design parameter that we put in. In fact, the way I'm going to do it is a fail-safe technique, as you'll see, that's very intuitive. And the L1, the M, and the L2 over there, which were all, there are three parameters effectively there, because the mutual inductance is not given uniquely by a relationship between L1 and L2. Who can remember what mutual inductance is given by? Given by, sorry?
Yes, there's something missing there, I think.
Unless you said it and I didn't hear it.
Yes, the square root of L1 times L2, but what's it? There's something multiplying that, though. Depends, it determines how much of the magnetic flux of one core meets the other. Remember the coupling coefficient? M is actually given by K root L1, L2. Well, this describes the coefficient of magnetic coupling, how much of the magnetic flux. When K is 1, then that means that all of the magnetic flux of each primary, the primary and secondary, link the other, the whole lot. It's very rare that mu equals 1, okay? That kappa equals 1, right? Mu, on the other hand, a much simpler parameter to visualise the relationship between V1 and V2, is the only thing that you need to know for an auto transformer, except, of course, the inductance of the core from which you make it. Okay? So we have a simple simple model. Now, summarising all our models now, remember we were going to solve this circuit, we had this, and then Tom noticed this horrible thing. Now we've got this, and life's looking a lot easier now. We've gotten rid of all transformers, and we've come down to an auto-transformer model with the 50 ohms there and our R that we never knew in the first place. And obviously the things we've got to find here, we'll have to find R, and we'll have to find CT, we'll have to find L, we'll have to find mu, whole lot. So let's see how we can do that. Right, first of all, these are parallel series tricks all the time. First thing I'm going to do is I want to absorb this in this guy, and the way to do that is to express that parallel combination of Z naught and mu L as a series combination. Okay? Now, I'm missing a view graph here. I think I am. I must have... yes. That's the other thing. Didn't comment on it. In order to get a high Q circuit, we want this to be a narrow band filter. Narrow band means high Q, right? Low losses and lots of energy stored. The input impedance of the input of the transformer must be much lower than Z naught. Okay? And so Z naught is going to be the determining factor which controls the current into this coil. Okay? All right, now expressing that as this circuit here as a series combination, then the 1 minus mu, that guy stays in the same place, and you can solve for these, okay? If mu L is the smaller of the two, it becomes, you can show that it's the same as this series element, and then you have this mu impedance, omega mu L squared over Z naught. Right. Who can see that? Okay, it's simply a matter of the usual approach. All right. The Q of this is going to be the same, so Z naught on omega nu L gives you the Q of that circuit, okay? And if you look at now the series combination, the Q is going to be omega nu L over, because now remember in the series combination you have omega L over the real over Z naught, so the Z naught goes into the top and you can see that these are equal. Okay? So this, that just sort of proves it, that the Q that you get from this, the series with the series combination of elements, is the same as that with the parallel. Everyone okay with that? You can show it in more detail, if you like, by re-expressing that circuit up the top as a series combination, because it's a parallel one. It's exactly the same as what I was saying before with the coupling capacitor when we got rid of that, except now I am interested in these formulae. Okay? Everyone okay with that? Right? So you can check that for yourselves. This parallel combination of nu L and Z naught, providing Z naught is much larger than omega nu L, can be approximated by that. Okay? Now you see you've got mu L and 1 minus mu L there, so that simplifies even further to this circuit. Now we really do have an L circuit. And what do we know in this circuit? Well, we don't know L, we don't know mu, C, T or R, okay? But when we solve these matching networks, we usually have to have Q as well. But because we don't know R, we're going to specify Q instead. So it's the reverse situation of the L matching network. All right, now we just apply the same techniques for that. This first equation here you will recognise if I just go up to here again. Remember that if you're matching a resistor here to a resistor there, then the Q is easy to find. Given the Q, then we know R. So R must equal this resistance here, which is omega nu L squared over Z naught times 1 plus Q squared. Remember that formula? If we know this resistor, we can calculate R given Q. Okay? You've seen that before in L matching networks. And now the other thing is that we said we wanted to have a high Q because this is going to be a sharp matching network. If you want a low Q, you'll find that some of the parameters you'll calculate will have funny values. The response will look positively ugly. And then you will go back and use Boeck's methodologies for designing bandpass filters. Okay? And a Q of about 10 is getting too low. Okay? So anyway, just simplifying this, we now have an expression for R if we know Q, and if we know L and mu as well, as a matter of fact. Right, now where do we get this one? Right, you know when solving for matching networks, this is just L networks all over again, okay? But let's just go back to the circuit again. Remember that what we're going to do here is we're specifying Q. So that means that 1 over omega CTR must be equal to Q, and it must also be true that omega L divided by omega nu L squared times Z naught, which is Z naught on omega L nu squared, okay, must be so as well. Okay, so that's that first expression there. Oh, sorry, I made a mistake with this one. This one's wrong, because the R is in parallel with the C here, so the Q is actually R over the impedance, 1 over omega CT. So Q is actually omega CTR, which is what I have on up on the board here. All right, and then we have our other expression there, Z naught on omega L LV squared. All right, everybody comfortable with that? Okay.
Why does it have to be a transformer? Can't we just use an ordinary inductor?
It is an ordinary inductor. You mean why can't you just make it out of three inductors?
Yeah.
Instead of... that's a good question, actually. I'm not sure what the practical. It's a practical idea, right? So really, we've ignored this guy in any case, okay? You can go into the last circuit. So why not these two guys here?
It's just a low pass filter.
It's not a low pass filter. This is a band pass filter. Yes, but this is very sharply tuned. You see, R is very high in value. No, the reason why it wouldn't make this out of two inductors is you can never control it. You have to be able to pick nu in this. Okay, nu is one of the things that you can compute, and therefore you have to build something which has that nu in it. And you can't do that if you make these separate inductors, because the separate inductors will always have discrete values and you'll be forever changing them to get them to suit. Okay, it's just a practical implication. All right. Now, I don't go through this step in too much detail, but if we re-express this circuit here, now back again is a parallel circuit, then we have these very simple relations that R is given by Z naught on mu squared. So you see, if Z naught is 50 ohms and mu is 0.1, then R is 5,000 ohms. It's a very large value, okay? And also, not too surprisingly, you can show that omega squared LCT is equal to 1. Now, what's the implication of that? If we go up here, when we had our parallel combination, or perhaps this is the best one here, that omega L now is in parallel with CT. And so when you say omega squared LCT equals 1, that simply means you adjust CT, you choose CT so that it completely tunes out L. And there's nothing there. So all you end up with is Z naught on mu squared with a resistor on the other side. So if I draw that circuit. So there's a resistor. We have L. Then we have CT and we have R. If the design process says here omega squared LCT is 1 at the frequency of operation, then these guys go and all we're left with is this one. And of course the resistances of the source and load must match in order to get maximum power transfer. So this is where this equation comes from. So you can see what we've done is we've divided and conquered this complicated circuit down to, which the complicated circuit we can build down to something we can design as well. Whether you can build something or design it, of course, are two different problems, and they're not necessarily the same. So here's what I'd say to do for this. The first thing to do is start by guessing what value of value you want. Can you make one? This is a very intuitive procedure. 1 microhenry at 50 megs, I suppose, 10 maybe at a pinch, you could design. The bigger is L, then the narrower band circuit you're going to go for. Once you have L, you have CT immediately, straight from that design equation. Then you choose your Q, and there was an equation up here that represented Z naught in terms of up here. This lower one. What we've got, we're guessing Q, and we've chosen an L for the job. Omega is our design frequency, and Z naught's 50 ohms. So now you see what the problem is, Tom. Nu is what we want, not L1. We don't get L1 in this, we only get nu. Okay? And the reason why that's a good thing is because afterward, with your auto transformer, you can come along. Remember, nu is determined by where the tap is. So you can keep moving the input connector along the coil to change the tap value mu. Right, it's a very touchy process. And at the end of the day, two things have to be satisfied once you've done this design. It better be mechanically stable. Right, if the inductor falls over when you bump it, then the circuit response will be impossible. Right. Also, your soldering has to be good. If there's an open circuit contact in series with the inductor, it's not going to work. And the other thing is that it has to be in a shielded container because this thing has high voltage on it and magnetic fields all over the place. So if somebody touches it, they'll ruin your response. And I think we've already seen that happening in some of our measurements. Okay. All right, so you've got nu. Once we have nu, now for the purposes of modelling, we now can compute L1. Remember that L2 is L in our... And M, the mutual inductance, is given by nu L. So now we have everything to do our design except for one thing in that original circuit. Who can remember what it was? What's the one thing I got out of this design process? And I'm happy I did because it's much easier to deal with it physically than mathematically. Yes, exactly, the coupling capacitor. I got rid of it on equation 1 and we've never seen it again. But it's there, we have to put it in. But at least now we know how to calculate everything else. All right, so let's do an example. Design a narrow band filter for 50 megahertz. Now, that sounds like a bit open-ended. I mean, how narrow band is this going to be? Well, we're aiming for we're going to be able to do down to a percent or less. Okay, we can do that probably with what we can build. And I can say that if you want to have a precise bandwidth, then you have to be prepared to juggle the value of L, the value of Q, and this coupling capacitor CC. Okay. Now, once you have Q and you've made a decision about your L, then you can calculate the tuning capacitor CT. And once you have CT, then CC has to be a lot less than it. And I'll show you what the consequences are of different choices of CC. So I modelled this. This comes from that HR design on the web. And there are three cases here with three different coupling capacitors. These on the left are the transfer functions, and these are the input impedance. One thing you can see that's automatically come out of this when you get the design right is that it's a match for 50 ohms. Okay? I'm sorry, this is not a great view graph, but anyway, it's not available on the web, so you can see it. The top case is what I would say is the ideal value of coupling capacitor. For those conditions up there, it was 1 picofarad. That's a tiny little thing, okay? Whereas I think it was hundreds of picofarads for CT. All right, so it's a tiny little touch. You can see why it's so sensitive to you touching it. Or anybody else, if somebody comes near your circuit and that 1 picofarad is upset, I'll show you what the consequences are. Suppose that the capacitance is 5 picofarads instead of 1, okay? Then your impedance curve starts to look like this. Now, here's 50 megahertz, by the way. There's 55. So look how narrow that is. There's a little jog up there at the top. It's flat at 50 ohms inside its passband. And it's also flat, and here we're going from, oh gosh, it's like about 49.8 to 50.2 megahertz. It's a very narrow band. And you can see also that there's quite a lot of attenuation. It's down at 30 dB, well before, you know, you get too far away from that carrier frequency, the centre frequency. These things perform probably worse than ceramic filters in this frequency range, and in higher frequency ranges, if you're a gigahertz or 900, there are what are called surface acoustic wave filters, such as the ones they have in your mobile phone, that have this kind of behaviour. The trouble is they're not variable, whereas here, with this design, you have something that'll work for your application. And as you go to higher frequencies, like 400 megs to a gigahertz, you go over from using LCs to actually using cavities. That's the way they do it, and I'll show you. If I could find my helical resonator filter for 433 megahertz, I'll show you what one of these looks like. All right, when the coupling capacitor is too high, you get this splitting of the two resonance curves. There are two resonance curves involved because of the value of the coupling capacitor. And this is the case of loose coupling. Okay? And loose coupling's bad because you have no match whatsoever inside your passband. The resistance has gone down to zero here. And you have this double humped transfer function. Similarly, if the value of CC is too small, so there's hardly any contact between the two circuits, then I've got these around the wrong way. That's tight coupling. This is loose coupling now because the capacitor is very low in value. And what happens now is that this peak here, there's always one peak, and it gets lower and lower and lower. And you can see, once again, there's no meaningful value of a match either. So for those parameters, choosing Q and choosing L, there's only one coupling capacitor that's going to give you a nice response. And then if you want to change the passband or whatever, then you have to go back and change the value of Q and the starting value of L. All right, so we're going to be putting that into practice in your project, making little helical resonator or LC resonator filters. We can also play around with ceramic filters in that range of frequencies. No need for surface acoustic wave filters if nobody's going to go above about 500 megahertz. Yeah. Any questions, anyway? I'll leave it at that. Bit bamboozled. I'll have a look at HR design, helical resonator design, or whatever I call it, and its solve program, and play around with the different parameters. They're not meant to vary. Is it, sorry?
It's easy to build an auto transformer.
Yes, because you only need one coil.
So I've noticed Tesla thinks that they can get a really high voltage and
That's exactly what they are. Yes. Yes, you have a pulse jet into the primary of an auto transformer, and it generates a high voltage right at the top. Yeah.
You have to be careful how you design them, though.